Transmission commence in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Level 7.
RandomChatter.com presents
the Strategic Homeland Intervention Enforcement and Logistics Division.
Do you copy?
Perimeter breach.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case files.
Authorizing.
Just call us S.H.I.E.L.D.
Access granted.
Coulson, get back to base.
Welcome back, agents. I trust you've all been suitably briefed on the most recent encounter. We'll be your hosts on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files. I'm Director Shepard.
And I'm Director Stolte.
And you've been authorized to undergo debriefing on the most recent mission from Agent Coulson and his operatives presented to the public as a dramatic, hour-long television series known as Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Fortunately, you've been cleared to know the truth. So, I just want to get in talking about this episode here, Josh. Thoughts? Feelings? You know, this is a safe space. You can say what you want.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I'm gonna sit over here in the corner and brood while you talk about it, if that's okay with you, because I'm, you know.
No, because both Phil Coulson and I really care about your well-being, and we're not going to let go. We're like little terriers. We're going to just grab on, and we're going to shake you until you cheer up.
Okay, well, fine. I'll follow this through, and then after that, I can't promise anything.
And then you're gone. Okay.
Then I'm gone.
All right. Well, next week will be really boring then.
Unless there's cookies in the break room, and then I might stick around for a while. That's cool.
All right, hang on. Let me just. Why don't you go ahead and tell us about the episode, and I'm gonna go ring up Gemma and see if she can set something up.
All right. Super. I can tell you about that because this week, October 25th, 2016. Episode 5, Season 4, we're in Lockup. Lockup is the title of this episode. It was written by Nora Zuckerman and Lila Zuckerman. Just hanging out in the Zuckerman household writing Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. That's because that's what you do, you know? That's what I'd like to say. I do that sometimes. Now, it was directed by Kate Woods. And, you know, our ghost friend Lucy Bauer, she's finally found what she was looking for. Wasn't it like a U2 CD? She actually found this book, right? The right. Darkhold is finally within her grasp. Well, you know, it would be if she actually had a grasp, right? Ghost, she can't touch it. But she can't make the evil tome reveal its secrets in her non-corporeal form. So she's going to need a little help. Unfortunately, that help is locked up in prison. Eli Morrow's the last of her team that actually has a body. So she goes to the prison to seek him out. Luckily for Eli, Coulson is on the trail too. And he's bringing Eli's nephew Robbie and his ghostwriter abilities with him. When they're in the prison though, Robbie has some pretty aggressive tendencies towards, you know, a member of the gang that actually had ended up leaving his brother paralyzed. And his hot temper may endanger the mission.
Are you crazy, S.A.?
that's right. Come on, man. That'd be really bad PR for S.H.I.E.L.D. right now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, even with Director Jeffrey Mace's winning personality, that's so powerful, it can win over skeptics, win debates against prejudiced senators, and take your dog for a walk at the same time. That's how powerful his smile is. Yes. Yeah, even when he comes out as an inhuman himself. So, just when it seemed everything is finally going to start looking like it was under control, they start unraveling again. But hey, you know, what'd you expect, man? It's the beginning of the season.
Yep. Okay. All right. Thanks. So Gemma said, thanks for that, Josh. That was great. Gemma said, in about 15 minutes, they'll be ready.
Oh, they're good?
Yeah.
Oh, good. They'll be all melty.
Yeah. Still should still be warm. So
she's making them in the lab. So if they're glowing, I might only eat
them. Yeah. So, Jeffrey just came right out of the cocoon in this episode, huh?
Yeah, he did. That was a little shocking to me, actually. That was probably the second most shocking thing to me.
Second most shocking thing. Okay.
Yeah. The first one took place in the prison. We can get into that. But
okay. You were gonna. Is it what the book that the guy was reading?
That was like, it. Yeah.
It was My Little Pony.
I was shocked. He was a brony. I never realized that. You know, the member of the Locos was a brony.
Yeah. Well, he's from the Fifth Street Ponies. So, well, hey, up front here. Just a little personal milestone for the two of us. Congratulations. This particular episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files is our 250th episode overall between
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Case Files, Scarlet Velocity, and Green Justice. 250 wow. hours that we've talked, at a minimum.
I am shocked. I did not think that you would be able to get through, you know, 20, 25 hours of listening to my voice. So I'm impressed.
Thank you to everybody that has stuck with us. And boy, how time flies.
Oh, it really does. It doesn't seem like we could have possibly talked for that many hours.
Well, and if you're just joining us, if you haven't listened to us before, welcome. And hopefully you'll find a reason to stick around for another 250 episodes.
Absolutely. I love all over those 250 episodes that you and I have been talking, that the fantastic people that I have had the opportunity to kind of talk to through the internet and meet. So it's really fun meeting new people and talking about this stuff, because that's really what it's all about for me, you know, just entertainment and community. So it's been really nice like talking to all you guys, and keep it up. I love hearing from you.
We do too. Well, I do too. Why did I say we?
Well, because everybody at S.H.I.E.L.D., you know, everybody in our department.
Because community is, you know, a strong community is a strong, you know, cool phrase from Director Mace. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Got it.
That's right.
I'm totally
right.
down with
this.
This
is why he does
things.
The PR and not you. See, that's yeah.
Dang it. All right. And another weird thing I noticed. In all of the, speaking of PR, in all the PR for S.H.I.E.L.D. this season, I believe, you know, and everything that I could find, the senator has been referred to as Rhoda Nadir, R-O-T-A. But in this episode, she was named as Ellen Nadir. We've seen her name on screen before, but it just says like Senator Nadir. So I couldn't find anything in any of the episodes that actually used her name, but just from some of the press release and stuff. So I thought that was kind of weird. Something I noticed. So it's also because both Flash and S.H.I.E.L.D. have had characters this season that PR materials came out calling characters one thing, and then by the time the shows aired, they had changed their name to something else, which I just don't hear about that a lot. You know, usually when they're sending out a PR release about a particular episode, they kind of know what they're doing. But in some cases, I guess, when it's like before they've shot it, right, in pre-production and stuff, maybe there's some other information and there's some reason they need to change it afterwards for...
What do you think would be a reason that they might change that?
For this one, I don't know, maybe just to make the character... have not such a foreign sounding name for some reason. I don't know. Maybe to try to soften the character, you know, having her called Ellen Nadir rather than Rhoda, R-O-T-A, Rata, Rhoda. I don't know. Another reason could be because you have to get clearance. They usually have legal do like clearance on people's names, because you don't want anyone saying that you're basing a character on me. So like if there was a character called Josh Stolte in a show, they would look and see, well, are there only a couple people in the country named that? And if so, then they might want to make it a little more generic name. Josh Smith or something like that.
That's way less common.
Yeah. Because they don't want anyone to bring, a lawsuit against them. Happened before, I'm sure. So.
Oh, either way, it's Nadir. She doesn't seem like a very nice person anyway.
Well, she's a senator to start with, so.
That's what I said.
Right. I'm not arguing with you, so. All right. Well, as you mentioned, we're in lockup this episode. That is the title. And it is also really, you know, what's going on here, both literally and figuratively. Let's talk about a little bit about the literal lockup. That's pretty obvious. We've got Eli Morrow, who... we saw it first time last week. He's incarcerated. He's Robbie's uncle. And he may have some information that will help them out with this case they're investigating with the ghostly characters from the Momentum Energy Labs explosion.
Because they found out that he did work with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we saw him identify. I think I don't remember if he was identified in the photo, but we could actually make out that it was him in the photo last week when it got showed at the prison. So we've got. It's kind of funny because they're staging a prison break in this episode, and it appears to be prison break episode on all of our podcasts this week. There is a distinct prison break plot or subplot on all three shows that you and I cover, which just strange happenstance.
Like a Jailhouse Rock crossover there.
Oh, my gosh. If Elvis showed up on Legends of Tomorrow this week. Like that would have been awesome. I didn't watch it yet. So, but I don't think he did. So I don't know. But, so not only is Coulson and Robbie coming to try to break out Eli Morrow, but Lucy is as well, because we find out that, she has access to the book. She's found the Darkhold again. But she appears to be, and maybe you can throw your two cents in on this. She goes from being corporeal to non-corporeal off and on. And I do you have any sense of why that is happening?
Well, why she? Oh, okay, yeah, I think so. Because she can't use the book, see, because she doesn't know the phrase, "I solemnly swear that I am up to no good." I think that's why she's not able to.
That is awesome. No, yeah.
Well, so what I was getting, because I wondered that too. She's able to move objects. She was obviously able to pick up the book. So she can do things like
bring it. Yeah, to wherever she was. So
yeah, right. So, but I get the sense, and at the beginning you saw a little bit of. I mean, they didn't really explain how it worked, but you saw a little bit of things it does. So when
the,
I guess
with
it
the
was
flashback
her, right?
Part, right?
Yeah, the flashback with with Lucy and I guess her husband, right? When
Joe.
They first found the book.
Yep.
That is her husband, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's her husband. That was the guy that was in the bed that she put her fingers in his head.
Yeah. Well, hey, okay. That's personal. That's not what.
Well,
a couple does
you
in
know.
There. Yeah. But
two consenting adults.
When the book was revealing itself. whoops! Again. it revealed to him. It revealed itself in German,
yeah.
Because he said that was his first language or native.
She said it was his first language, which I would assume, his native tongue, basically.
Yeah, and then to her, it didn't. You know, they saw something different. Mm-hmm. So what I take from that was, you know, that the book is somehow able to read the mind of the two. I was trying to think of a more. You know, mystical word than read the mind, but and so
divine.
Sure, yeah, no, that sounds better actually. So in her corporeal form here, I'm guessing it can't do that, or it doesn't do that because she's not solid and actually touching. And they kind of showed that where she put her hands through the book, you know, like she was trying to touch it. So it wasn't that she couldn't actually pick it up or anything. I just don't think the book is responding to her.
Oh, okay,
that's how I took it.
Yeah, that's completely possible. And you're right, because she it started to kind of reveal itself, but then it erased itself, or maybe it had the writing in it previously from before and it started to erase itself. And then she kind of just couldn't touch it after the fact.
I mean,
so.
I guess she should have thought of that before she, you know, killed her husband. Which I guess he wasn't dead when she left, but he was starting to see because she had touched him, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
This book is interesting, and I guess that whole scene where it showed the two different languages, or they explained it had two different languages, was maybe kind of explained it to me, because I wondered how this ancient mystical, you know, book that's been around for a long, long time and caused lots of problems, but on the cover it clearly says, you know, in English letters, Darkhold, TM.
It appears to say Darkhold, Josh.
It appears to say Darkhold.
To
right.
me,
maybe that's,
it said something entirely different.
We got to hold it upside down. Then it says Darkhold.
Then it says Darkhold, right.
Yeah, but no, but see, then it could maybe reveal itself like that after someone has used it, or maybe that's not what it says. It just looks like that's what it says. You know, those are just symbols or something like that. And that they thought it said that, so that's what they call it. But anyway.
Got it. And... apparently she wants to get this book, and I'm assuming she's choosing to use Eli just because he had worked with them and has some knowledge about what they had done at the time prior to the accident. I'm going to put the accident in quotes because we're not exactly sure what it is, but I assume based on what's kind of been intimated, because I don't think it was specifically said the other week, that they unleashed forces beyond their control and, of course, basically ghosted six of these characters, and then Eli put Joe in the hospital with a pretty serious beating.
And then the other thing that I took from the fact that she wants Eli is that when the team, I guess, you know, that the scientists were using this book, it revealed something specific that they were trying to do. I don't think the Darkhold is the same thing all the time. I think it's different to everybody that touches it.
Interesting.
Not just languages, but like what you want it to reveal. And they wanted something very specific. So the reason that she had to have Eli as opposed to just some other human being that could actually touch it was because he was part of the team. And when he touched it, it would reveal what they needed so she could get back to her humanly self, you know?
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's an interesting take on it. That hadn't actually occurred to me. As far as I got was that he was probably reading it in Spanish.
Oh, that could be true. I couldn't read anything on any of the pages. So.
No, there were some drawings and stuff like that. And I'm going to save a little piece for about the Darkhold that I just I have some ideas on, but I'm going to save it for our references section at the end because it also could potentially be a spoiler. So that way people could just skip at down to the end of the episode if they want to. So, well, remind me to talk about that down there.
Okay,
and
I can
do that. Okay, so right now, let's see. In a previous episode, I think it was two or three episodes ago, when the ghosts all got together at Momentum Labs, Ghost Rider came in and we saw him take care of one of the ghosts. That was Frederick. And we've only ever seen four ghosts, Lucy and then Frederick and then Vincent and Hugo, who were on this week's episode. Hugo was the one that couldn't speak properly after the fact. And then Vincent was just the other guy. So there's potentially two other ghosts still, unless they were killed outright. But if you recall our discussion from a few weeks ago at the Momentum Labs, when the ghosts were coming back, there were six crates there. So my assumption is that the six scientists were ghosted. Eli went to prison and Joe went to the hospital. So that makes up the eight people from the photo.
Why was Mac trying to shoot that guy?
Because when they're corporeal, he does know they've got a, they can be, affected by that, I guess. Because in that previous episode, Mac shot at the ghost that was charging at him and it dissipated and disappeared.
Okay. All right.
Or disapparated, I guess, to use the vernacular. He doesn't know. It had worked before, so that's probably why. You know, he could have just thrown his gun at it too when he was out of bullets, but you know, it may have ducked. So we're down to Lucy and potentially two other ghosts, one woman and one man, if they aren't already dead, but we haven't seen them. And then Vincent and Hugo got killed this week by Robbie, which, awesome. Seeing him using his chain kind of like a whip there. He's kind of, I guess since last week, realized that's a pretty nifty weapon. So thanks to James for showing that to him. And then Joe's dead. So really that leaves Eli as the only survivor. And that's, you know, that's I think mainly why Lucy wants to help him bring her back to life. Though, of course, I don't believe that's going to work out okay for anyone. I don't think Eli is going to get out of this without some problem. Either, you know, he's going to die or he will be compromised in some fashion that he will have to be gone. What do you think is going to happen with Eli? Is there any happy ending for this character?
I don't know. Probably not. I mean, it's not looking good. I don't think, you know, Lucy will necessarily take him out, but I think that, yeah, I'm not sure, but I don't think it's going to make Robbie happy. I think it's going to kind of push him over the edge a little bit when something happens to Eli.
Mm. Well, what about Robbie with his need to take out these bad people? So he thinks that helping destroy the bad people will free him from the spirit, whether it's the people that have wronged him and his brother or the people that have wronged his uncle. He's still got he had a few more to go overall. He takes out two of the scientist people, so that, like I said, there's still probably maybe three other ghosts that he needs to deal with to kind of potentially balance the scales for his uncle. He apparently took care of the last Fifth Street Loco member in this episode, based on what the inmate said, that all of his homeboys had been burned alive, and, you know, so basically he was the last one.
That was the first most shocking thing for me in this episode.
him actually going in, burning the guy up.
How he did it, you know, that he did it, because obviously, you know, Ghost Rider is not your typical hero, and we've known that before he was ever on mm-hmm. this show. But, you know, we do like to think of him as the good guy, and that he would make the so-called right choice when the time happens, you know, even if he is he's kind of cursed or whatever you would say.
Yeah, he's his Punisher-esque, deal. You know, where it's like he is a hero because he usually has his own title, his own
sure.
you know, comic book, but his methods are really anti-hero and not
for sure.
You know, people talk about Spider-Man being kind of anti-hero. I mean, you know, Ghost Rider and the Punisher compared to that are
way
down the spectrum.
And the way, and not only that, but I mean, first of all, first of all, he sent out Eli and said, no, go ahead, you'll be fine, go ahead, yeah. I got it. So he kind of jeopardized his uncle right there. I mean, not just the mission, because he didn't care too much about that, but jeopardized his uncle's safety, his uncle's life. And then he went in there to this guy who, according to him, you know, but it was pretty believable, didn't really have anything to do with paralyzing his brother and attacking them in the hit. I mean, he's a member of the gang, right? But it wasn't him. So, you know, just based on all that and him still making the decision to kill this cornered man, it was shocking to me. No, I'm not complaining or anything like that. That was just out of the episode. That was the first most shocking thing to me.
Okay. Yeah. And I just,
it really set up some, good dynamic that's going to generate at least several good stories in the coming weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, he's moving down a path where, you know, if you do want to think about this character as more of a heroic character, he's jeopardizing that heroism by succumbing to these darker urges. And I guess is he really in control? Like he says he is in control. Control was kind of another aspect for a couple of the characters in this episode, whether to use or not to use their powers. I'm just wondering, do you think, you know, is he as in control as he says he is?
Ooh,
Robbie, that is.
I think no.
Okay.
Even if it wasn't some other power controlling him in this case, it's still he himself is not in control of his impulses, I guess.
His
demons. You know,
demons.
I mean, even if it was, even if it wasn't the literal demons, he's still got some serious things going on there. So,
well, this was definitely, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe this is the most personal death to him that we've seen Ghost Rider commit.
Oh, for sure. I think there has been others though that we didn't see, but to me, it seemed personal just because, not just as it was going on, but after it happened and the consequences that happened because he did it.
Yeah.
And it really hit him hard, I think.
Agreed. Yeah, that's I'm really kind of fascinated with the way they're taking this character, because it's not quite any ghostwriter from the comics. I mean, there's a lot of basis from the Robbie Reyes ghostwriter, but you've got a whole bunch of other things going. And now, granted, I'm not a huge reader of ghostwriter. I've read, like I said, the Robbie Reyes version, but I've read some of the Johnny Blaze stuff, but not enough to know if you know this is within a character arc for that character. Or not.
Yeah. Well, so. And I hope nobody takes this as any kind of a criticism of the story. I actually thought it made it quite interesting. So, I wasn't overly shocked. Well, it was powerful. It was a powerful scene with those flames coming out and then kind of hearing the screams and things. So,
well, and the other inmates running back into their cells and closing the doors.
Yeah.
That I found that just kind of a nice little humorous release to the end of that sequence, which, like you said, was pretty intense.
Yeah.
So just as an aside, how long do you bake an inmate, right? I mean, it's, what, like 5-10 seconds at 4,000 degrees, something like that?
If you're baking, it's 350,000 degrees.
Okay.
So, and then, 10, 15 seconds, I think, usually. You'd okay. Stick a toothpick in it just to see in the middle there.
All right. So going back to the title again, talking about lockup, I think figuratively we had Daisy kind of being in a lockup. She is very much still keeping with her persona from the last three episodes, kind of sticking to herself. She thinks it's best that she keeps her distance from everybody else, that not to basically, have any ties with anyone, not to reinstitute friendships or anything like that. She obviously has a problem where she still wants to die. I mean, I think that whole sequence in the kitchen or the mess hall or whatever really showed she had quite a death wish going. Do you agree there? Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. And yeah, she needs some help. They need to get her. She needs some more intense help. I mean, she doesn't just need to come back to the team. She actually needs some therapy here.
It's too bad that, May's ex-husband isn't around anymore. Dr. Andrew, right?
Yeah. That would have come in handy. Telling you.
It's kind of sad because I felt like because she was working with the team again, that was going to help her, but still by the end of the episode, and as you kind of had intimated earlier, she is working with the team to solve this issue right now, but then she's going to leave. That's it. She wants to go back out on her own and, not endanger anybody else, not have to, I don't know exactly what she thinks it is other than that. I mean, maybe just not wanting to have to put the effort into being with people, because she was alone there for quite a while, right? Before Coulson found her in the season premiere or in the series premiere, right?
Right. So, well, supposedly, but it sounded like maybe she was getting help from other people when she needed it.
Possibly,
like
yo-yo
and things like that.
Yeah, yeah. Even back in season one, too.
Oh, right.
She has always been kind of on her own until S.H.I.E.L.D. took her under its wing, so to speak, and then these tragedies befall her at the end of last season, so she goes off on her own over the summer here.
Gotcha, and, yeah.
Yeah, nobody's really had a chance yet to kind of just sit down and talk to her. I mean, the closest thing we've seen to it previous to this episode was Mac talking to her a little bit last week, I think. And he was more upset, I think. But May comes in, and she can see right through it. It's, May being May. I thought it was really humorous where Daisy's like, yeah, the arm's okay. And she's like, that's fine. I didn't ask. she kind of lays it right there on the line that, you're behaving just like I was. And if you look at the way the character arcs worked, Daisy had been on her own as Sky. May had been on her own at that point at the beginning of the series back in season one. And what May had gone through with her trauma from the cavalry episode is similar enough to what Daisy's gone through. And, you know, and May tells her as much that, you know, she's been through this and Phil Coulson is not going to give up on you. It's just, that's not within his nature. And she, you know, says these really nice things about his heart being, you know, bigger than most and, you know, kind of what we've seen from him, but he's been a little cold to her. And I think that's just because he's, you know, getting rejection from her. Is
you don't think it's him be like showing that he's upset?
He is upset. I mean, I think he is upset with it. But even when we've seen him upset before, he still is caring. I mean, it's and I can't tell if it's really him being upset or if he's just kind of playing her to placate her so he can deal with it later, or if it's like sarcastic in some way.
Okay.
I don't know what I mean. Are you taking it as like he's on honest to gosh upset about
her behavior? Feels to me, which isn't really in Coulson's nature, at least for this long. So I don't know what I'm very curious to see what his feelings for her, like his true feelings for her, are.
Because I feel like he's he stopped trying to be her friend and he's just stepped back and being her boss because I think he sees the friendship aspect grating on both of them. So, you know, as kind of a smart person that he is, I think he has kind of tuned down that part of the personality or that part of the interaction with her. And yeah, I think he was a little upset with her, you know, honestly upset towards at the end of the scene where they rescue her in the kitchen.
Uh-huh.
Because he cares for her, that's why he's upset, because she's taking these risks, right? It's, she's putting herself in this dangerous position and she was thinking that, you know, if she makes it, fine, if she doesn't make it, but also, she's ignoring a direct order, you know, from him, and you know that as a ex-director and stuff, you know that has got a really grate on him as well.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I suppose so. Although he seemed much more Coulson-like in this episode, with some of his interactions with May and stuff. I noticed, and when I say Coulson-like, I mean original Coulson, like from the movies, and
yeah.
So some humor in there and lightheartedness, and I liked seeing that.
Yeah, the humor between he and May and him and Mac and stuff like that is still quite evident. And he is behaving slightly differently around Daisy, but you know, maybe it's just kid gloves kind of thing, you know, just to avoid pushing her away quicker. I guess I don't, you know,
maybe
I don't know. I want Daisy to get back in to the group here.
Yeah, me too. She can work out her demons with the group, but I want her with the group. I want her to stop getting over this, wallowing in self-pity kind of thing. And, I want her to, want to be part of the family again.
I don't want her to leave. Okay, yeah, I give her probably a couple more episodes. I think she probably will be fine by the time we get back from Thanksgiving.
All right. Well, that's what Thanksgiving's for, see?
Guess we'll see. Yeah. Yeah, maybe she needs to just take stock of everything. So, okay, the other big thing going on in this episode is the director and Simmons fretting about her lie detector, which we were talking about a lot last week, and why is this so important to her and stuff. I go back and forth on the director. that first episode where all they did was talk about him, but we didn't see him, you're like, oh, wow, this, who is this guy? He sounds kind of like a jerk. And then we meet him in the second episode, and he's just so charming. And he has this great rapport with Coulson, apparently. And Coulson knows his secret and, you know, kind of knows what's going on. Seems like Coulson was involved in picking him for the job. And so then you're like, well, I need to like this guy. And then we hear more stuff about the about all these lie detector tests you've got to take. And the director is really tough about this kind of stuff. And they keep playing the character with this uber serious nature. And then, oh, wait a second. No, that's not what he's thinking. And they kind of turn it around and do, you know, like a jokey thing. This week where he's like, you know, please come with me. And he's like, you know, I need to know how, you know, how, what did he say? The, you know, are you a member of S.H.I.E.L.D., you know, the, to the core or whatever? And she's like, oh, absolutely. And he's like, good, because I need your help. And it's like, all of a sudden, yeah, the tone of the scene changes. And I just don't know what to make about this character. And I think you said something really interesting last week about this. And when I couldn't really figure out, like, I couldn't understand my feelings about this. And you pointed out that our characters that we trust and respect are confused by this. So that's why we feel confused. But then we also see him, as I said, as this like charming guy. So yeah, that's why we feel so conflicted about this. Any new thoughts about him after all this weird stuff this week?
Well, I mean, there hasn't been a time in the season, even before he was on the series itself, you know, in the first episode, that we weren't a little suspicious of him because of the way they reacted to him. But this week we saw two particular things that were very incriminating, I guess, against him. Or one was very incriminating, and that was the scene with Nadir at the end, where he's obviously got some stuff in his closet there he doesn't want revealed, mm-hmm, and she's threatening to reveal those, right? Or threatening him.
Yeah, she's threatening him with releasing information about this, the fact
S.H.I.E.L.D.
that Ghost Rider's been working with S.H.I.E.L.D., yeah.
Right, S.H.I.E.L.D. activities. So, and then we saw Simmons, who obviously is very good at reading those little micro expressions, right? Mm-hmm. And saw that he was lying, and also knows, well, I don't know for sure that she knows some of his past isn't true, because she kind of threatens him with that, but I don't know for sure how much she knows about it.
Yeah, it seems like she caught him in this lie, but she may not. I mean, she probably doesn't know anything more than that, other than she knows that he's not telling the truth about this, helping this woman, or saving this woman in the UN bombing in Vienna. And at first time through the episode, I was like, what the heck are they talking about? What? And then I realized, oh, it's the it's from Captain America Civil War. It's when Bucky, but not Bucky, actually, Zemo, took out the UN and killed Black Panther's father. Mace was there. I mean, we didn't see him in the movie, but supposedly the character was there. And according to the news report portion we saw, he protected this woman. But apparently that's not the case. So that's, you know, again, a character that we trust, that we follow, Simmons, is now telling us that this character is not all he appears to be, which is interesting because they play it off the fact that in the TV universe, everybody knows this guy, and he's this great, you know, hero kind of person, you know, very well liked, great poll numbers, and then he reveals something to them that they don't know, the fact that he's an inhuman. But we already knew that. But now they've kind of flipped the whole thing on us, and yeah, he's told everyone he's an inhuman, but now we realize that there's something that everybody else knows that we've just been told, and it's not actually true. And why is that important? I don't know, but you know, it's if it's anything like things that we've seen in the news lately, here in the United States at least, is that when people in positions of power, have a story about them, and then all of a sudden somebody comes out and says, accuses them of lying about that, all sorts of interesting things start to come out. So I thought she was actually going to accuse him of not being an Inhuman. I thought she was going to say he was lying about that, but we already knew that he was. So I didn't know where she was going with it.
He is a mystery, which is what he's supposed to be, which makes him an interesting character. I still don't fully trust him, but now I'm wondering now if he's just more of one of those guys that makes himself out to be better than he actually is, and kind of setting himself up for this fall when everybody realizes he's more Milli Vanilli than, you know.
So kind of like padding, right? Padding his resume.
Yeah, I guess
more so than anything nefarious, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's what it seems. That's what it feels like right now. Maybe there's more to it than that, but I what we know and what Coulson kind of feels about the guy and how he has been kind of helping S.H.I.E.L.D., it doesn't seem like it's evil or anything. But we'll see. I think he's going to make a series of mistakes that's going to put S.H.I.E.L.D. and Coulson and his team in jeopardy from the watchdogs and people like Nadir, people in power that control the watchdogs, because he starts making these mistakes that make S.H.I.E.L.D. look bad.
What about the part where Coulson says that he may not be able to trust him? I'm curious about that, and I just want to get your take on it, because we did see that in private between Coulson and Mace, they seem to have a good rapport. And like I mentioned earlier, it seems like Coulson was instrumental in having Mace chosen to be the new director. And Coulson had to kind of willingly give over that control. But in this sequence on the bus, Coulson says that he doesn't trust him in front of other people. And is he being honest there, or is this sort of because this mystery needs to exist and people don't like the director? Is he just saying that to kind of go along with everybody else who dislikes or distrusts the director because they don't know who he is?
I don't know. See, it's one of those things where I think Coulson knows more than he's revealing.
It's always the way it is. Coulson knows
it is. He's like that a lot, but a lot of times it's necessary.
Maybe he's actually still the director. Coulson is, and this is all an elaborate ruse to draw something out.
I don't think so. Just based on the fact that he prevented Coulson from going to see May going with May when she was having her issues a couple weeks ago, and how he sort of, is not pushing Coulson around, but leading him to where he wants him.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Well, any other ideas this week about what Nadir's plan may be? We've didn't get any more about her going to visit her brother. Maybe that'll be next week and check in on that cocoon. But now she's got this information that's coming up. I guess she's got people on the inside that give her footage from the prison cameras. Coincidentally, she's going to leak it to ABC News, which
I noticed that too.
Wow. Let's just shout our network out.
I was surprised she didn't say, and this will be showing up on ABC News Wednesdays after Blackish. But nothing new as far as what I think her plan is going to be. I still think it's the same type of thing. Take out these Inhumans because of her prejudice towards people that are different, and this particular group that they're afraid of because of these abilities. But which I thought was interesting that Mace pointed out that more Inhumans died during those blackouts than humans did. I thought that was an interesting thing.
So we found out there were two people that died on the helicopter crash.
Yes.
And then everybody else that died were Inhumans that were killed by the watchdogs.
And it was, what, like 14 or something like that?
17, I think is
17,
what they said.
17. I knew there was a teen in there. and so but what I think we maybe learned a little more evidence of this week is that she clearly has some powerful allies that are able to get information or know things that they otherwise wouldn't know, like the stuff that happened in the jail.
Yeah.
So I want to know more about who she's working with, even more than what her motivation is.
Now, here's a question I haven't asked before in all the other stuff we talked about, especially when we were talking, I think it was last week about her, or 2 weeks ago about her brother in the cocoon, the Terra Genesis cocoon. If he is turning into an inhuman, what are the odds that she also has the ability to turn into an inhuman, and or is she already an inhuman?
Well, now, her being already an inhuman, that's an interesting take. Hadn't even considered that. You said because her brother was in the cocoon, whether he's becoming an inhuman or whatever. I don't necessarily think that it has anything to do with relationship. We've just seen that it's been exposure to the...
Yeah, to but the, wouldn't it be... Isn't it part of genetics, right? So wouldn't there potentially be some inhuman DNA in her as well if they're from the same family? I don't know. I mean, that's...
Oh, I see. For the way that it affects you.
Yeah.
I guess, yeah. I mean, it's possible she's got the potential to it if she's been exposed to it. Yeah, I hadn't even considered that. That makes it even more interesting.
Because then, of course, you'd have the director of S.H.I.E.L.D. being an inhuman. You'd have this anti-inhuman senator, which I think they have done a really interesting job of writing her and just some of the dialogue between Stephanopoulos and her, you know, where he's calling her out on the, you know, the words that she uses, and she, you know, takes quite a big affront at the fact that he's, you know, saying that she would be what is it, a dog whistle to the hate groups and stuff like that. It's, again, it just shows that the writers on the show, I think, are really paying attention and listening to what's going on in the real world and pulling some of that into the show.
And they've done a great job writing her and her, you know, performing the Parminder Nagra, right, performing her, because I do dislike her almost as much as real politicians in the real world. So,
and we don't hardly know anything about her, so the fact that you're basing that on very little is
well, no, but I'm basing it on her sort of underhandedness and hate towards a group that she doesn't understand, right?
Yeah. So potentially, allegedly, yeah,
true.
So. Okay, well, so yeah, I think a lot more questions this episode than answers. And
but it was a fun episode to get through.
Yeah, I don't even remember what the preview for next week was, so I'm always interested to see what's coming. I usually don't hear about anything until like Monday or Tuesday during the day when they start to release those, you know, like the, here's a 2-minute preview of tonight's episode kind of thing. Which always, you know, I'm like, oh, I'm not going to watch that. And then I always end up watching it, but it doesn't really matter, 'cause it's usually, I think we've mentioned before, it only, shows up in like the first 10 or 15 minutes, or it's the first episode or the first, scene in the episode or something like that. So.
Yeah. Whereas I like seeing the preview for next week at the end of the show and the commercials and things I see on the internet, all those things you just mentioned, because for me, it kind of pumps me up. It gets me hyped, which is what it's supposed to do, to look forward to next week. So I like seeing those things. I know people don't like the spoilers sometimes, but
yeah. Well, we got a lot of use of shotgun axe this week too. I also mentioned that.
Oh, I love that. I love that they're using that.
He got to use the shotgun part. He got to use the axe part to take apart a door, and then he threw it, and I was surprised. That thing's well balanced if he can throw it and have it stick in the bad guy like that, or in the ghost, you know, before the ghost disappears and it falls to the floor. But so, all right. Well, I want to get to a couple references here. I'm going to go through just the main stuff in the episode, and then I'll give you guys a little spoiler warning a little further down here. So the first big thing that I noticed, And I thought this is an awesome shout out. And it, to me, I wonder if it's actually a tease for the inclusion of some other character in the future of this season. But in the flashback portion, did you notice there were some posters on the wall, in the, basement or wherever it was they were?
Yeah.
So one of these posters was for the Quentin Carnival, like Quentin Tarantino. And the Quentin Carnival is the, carnival that, that, Johnny Blaze performed at in the Ghost Rider comic books. Not only that, but when they, where they find the Darkhold on the box behind them under the poster is a part of a motorcycle chassis. And then they move a leather jacket out of the way to open up the Darkhold. And there is a chain, like a, you know, like the one the Ghost Rider used in the episode, like hanging from the ceiling. And all those things together really say Johnny Blaze, right? He's, you know, leather jacket wearing, motorcycle riding, chain wielding Ghost Rider. And there was a, an issue or two in the last Robbie Reyes comic where Johnny Blaze shows up and kind of does a team up with this Ghost Rider. And, you know, it was weird because Johnny didn't know how Robbie, you know, got the power because of, you know, selling a soul. Johnny sold his soul to the devil, but Robbie in the comic books, is basically possessed, by the spirit. So I think that would be kind of cool. I think, I actually think it's probably more just a tease and kind of a sly reference, but it really would be cool if they had another Ghost Rider show up on the show too. Don't know how they'd pull that off, I guess.
I want to know on these comic book shows, who's in charge of putting these little details in that, that only your diehard fan would notice and find out about and learn. I love it. I love that they put these tiny little references. There must be, I mean, it can't, I don't think it's the writers. They're like, make sure there's a carnival poster from one of the comics on in this scene. I mean, but
sometimes it's the writers
that design. Yeah. Yeah.
But sometimes it's the, like the prop masters that do it, you know, they're fans too, or, you know, they, or they're working on the show and they talk to their friends and say, hey man, I know you're a big time into Marvel Comics and Ghost Rider. Like, what's a cool, you know, Easter egg we could put in or something like that?
Yeah. So. Or you know what? We need to put some stuff on the walls here, some props in here. Let's use some stuff from the comics just as a nod to fans. I love that. I love that they do that.
I kind of would have to think that just as tight as the Marvel Universe, that I have to think Jeff Loeb's really involved in that kind of thing where he says, we should do a little tease here. We should do a little thing here. Why don't you include this? And maybe the people that are working on the show don't know why they're including it because he's got a plan for further down the road for the shows. But, you know, he's kind of in charge of all the Marvel TV stuff. So,
yeah,
I think there might be something there. We also had a number of references to Ghostbusters, Mac talking about busting them ghosts. So I thought that was pretty funny. Coulson's quizzing May on what it was like to die because he actually doesn't remember. And she says that it didn't feel like a trip to Tahiti, which you can look at one way and saying, you know, it's not like a vacation, but also I think it's a very sly reference to the fact that Coulson went through the Tahiti protocol and that's how he was brought back to life. That was primarily the way that I took it, but I could see if you weren't aware of that and you haven't been watching the show, it still kind of makes sense. So
that's true. Yeah, we didn't really talk too much about that because May was telling Coulson that she saw him when she died.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't wait to hear more about that.
It may only take us another two seasons to get that story out of her because
yep, that's true.
She does not really talk about her feelings or anything too much. So, I thought this was just kind of interesting that the inmate that Robbie confronted was reading a Pet Cemetery, but it was the Spanish version of it. I could tell that it said Stephen King on it, and I was looking closer to see if it was Firestarter. That's what I thought would have been a really funny in-joke, but maybe they felt that was too spot on or something like that.
Well, Pet Cemetery is about bringing people back or things back from the dead. And that's kind of what we're doing with the,
oh my gosh, you know, yeah,
the ghost. So, I mean, it's,
oh, of course. Yeah. It didn't, I was applying it to the storyline with Robbie, not to the overall storyline. So that's great.
I played with Eli. I played with the locals. Now I'm going to play with you.
Dude, you got to stop that. That movie just creeps me out. The
yes, me too.
Kid hiding under the bed and everything. And what was it? Church? Was that the name of the cat?
Yeah, that sounds about right. It's been so long. It gives me nightmares.
All right. And speaking of nightmares, when Mac gets infected, quote unquote, by the ghost virus, he references Insane Clown Posse with
even I got that one. I was proud of myself on that one.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. So, all right, the next two things I'm going to mention, potential spoilers. So if you want to just skip ahead about a minute and a half, I'm going to talk about these two things because I had the opportunity this week to see an advanced preview of Doctor Strange.
Right. Okay. So, now, if you're gonna turn it off here, make sure you give us some reviews on iTunes. Okay, go ahead. Now.
Okay. I'm hoping I can do this in a minute and a half here. So.
Okay.
All right. So at one point during the discussion on TV, Senator Nadir talks about the fact that there are disturbances, quote, in Hong Kong, or little blue men running around in Montana or something. Not sure what the Montana reference is, but there are, quote, disturbances in Hong Kong in the Doctor Strange movie. There is a large set piece battle that takes place in Hong Kong. So be on the lookout for that. And then also the stuff we were talking about with the Darkhold, about how the book reads you, and the fact that when they open it up, the you know, it appears in whatever language the person, you know, can read. Mystical books are a very large part of Doctor Strange as well. There's a whole library of these books, and Stephen reads through a lot of these. Now, there's no intimation that the books are actually that he's able to read them in English. He's actually learning the languages of the books, but the books themselves give, quote, spells, and what spells are in the Marvel Universe now are basically the ancient one says, think of them as programs. It's a scientific function, and you can read a spell which opens little portals to other dimensions and allows you to use energy from those dimensions. So that's, you know, the Doctor Strange movie is kind of informing what they're doing with the Darkhold here. So I thought that was really interesting. And go see the movie and you'll find a lot more interesting stuff like that. And I'm assuming since the movie comes out next week, there we'll get some more maybe teases on next week's episode. And then in two episodes, Doctor Strange will be out. So if there's anything massive that they want to talk about, that's where we'll see the references.
Interesting. I'm dying to see it.
Oh, yeah. You should totally. It is the most visual Marvel movie to date. It's definitely number one on that scale. I probably would put it in my top five of the films, and I'm still kind of trying to figure out where that belongs, but definitely worth it. Definitely go see it. I recommend it to all Marvel Cinematic Universe fans. So, all right. Well, with that, our spoilers are done. So want to give a big shout out to all my homies in the Fifth Street Locos, you know. No offense, Robbie, you know, I just some friends from college. cookies should be ready in a minute, Josh. So that's
yes.
All.
Yes, okay. I'll stick around.
All right. That's all we've got for this week's episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files. So, you know, once you finish this next little part, you can go to the break room and get a snack.
All right, I'm going to get a snack and a glass of milk, and you guys, I will share them with you. So please come on over, and that's my way of bribing you, because if you enjoyed this episode, I would love for you to give feedback on iTunes, and then I'll share my cookies with you. right? So get over there on iTunes and write a good review for us so we can share this with everybody. Also, if you want to just contact us let us know what you're thinking of the show, if you see anything we missed, send us an email, shield@randomchatter.com. We also take cookie recipes there. Twitter is @AgentsPodcast. And our Facebook page, of course, you can search for us on Facebook, but the address is facebook.com/agentspodcast.
And as I had mentioned earlier in the episode, you can check out the other shows Josh and I podcast about, which include Green Justice, an Arrow podcast, and Scarlet Velocity, a Flash podcast, all on the randomchatter.com network. All shows
and
are also
all
available.
Talking about Prison Breaks.
Oh, yeah. This week, all talking about Prison Breaks. So if you're a big fan of Prison Breaks of sorts, listen to our shows. The shows are also available on the iTunes Store and through Stitcher for Android or iOS. And if you guys are enjoying the podcast or cookies, please be sure to tell your friends about us. So for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files, this is Jay.
And this is Josh.
Okay, I told you not to talk with your mouth. Anyway, signing off from Level 7. This podcast is not endorsed by ABC Television or Marvel Entertainment. The official website for Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. can be found at www.agentsofshield.com. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and related elements are copyright Marvel Entertainment, LLC.
Transmission terminated.